Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
The U.S. economy is weak and in a fragile condition, but the bottom has yet to drop out. While a recession is inevitable, the business cycle hasn't been repealed, and should occur in the near future, it's not imminent, as in going to happen in the next few weeks or days. So let's reiterate why we became less bearish about a week ago. The plunge in stocks that has occurred since February 19th was just ripe for a short covering rally. This was due to the Fed's announcement to reduce the pace of quantitative tightening on March 19th. Also, the typical end of quarter painting ritual to make account statements look better is happening right now. However, keep in mind that this is in no way the resumption of the bull market. Stocks are priced at a very rich 20 times earnings, which are projected to grow 11% next year. But this is a scenario where GDP growth is projected to grow less than 1% and stock market liquidity is drying up. According to RBC Capital, when GDP growth has been greater than zero, so we're not in a recession, but less than 1%, so the Fed isn't cutting rates, but the market is in a malaise, or the Fed isn't slashing rates and printing money like drunken monkeys, like they are accustomed to do in most recessions. They haven't gotten there yet. So think about this. The economy is growing less than 1%, but not in a recession. Since 1947, the data shows that the market has lost an average of 17%. That is just half of the issue. The more important problem is that the valuation of stocks in relation to the underlying economy is twice the level of its historical mean. The risk-reward ratio has rarely been worse, if ever. It is just difficult to grow the economy and earnings when the consumer is losing confidence so rapidly. The Conference Board's measure for future expectations of consumer confidence, taken in March, tumbled 9.6 points to 65.2. That reading of 65.2 is the lowest reading in 12 years. Incredibly, those 12 years encompass the COVID crisis. So consumers are more fearful now than they were during COVID. By the way, a reading of confidence below 80 on the index has typically been associated with recessions. So 65.2 is dour indeed. Now, many on Wall Street are quick to lay the blame for the lack of consumer and business confidence solely on tariffs. However, tariffs are damaging to confidence. That's true. That's only part of the story. Of course, tariffs are intended to help balance our trade deficit, rebuild the middle class, and to ensure national security. All very well needed and very well intended from our president. Nevertheless, the knee-jerking roller coaster of on and off tariffs from Trump is not helpful. Support him or not, and I support him. It's just not helpful. For example, the market rallied hard yesterday on the news that Trump's Liberation Day of reciprocal tariffs, set to be announced on April 2nd, would no longer be reciprocal. I mean, the man has said reciprocal tariffs are coming about 150,000 times. But now reciprocal tariffs became lenient on reciprocal tariffs. They're going to be lenient reciprocal tariffs instead. Then the next day, today, tariffs on autos are to be announced at 4 o'clock. I'm recording this podcast at 3 o'clock. But it's not just tariffs. There is also the damage already done to the bottom four quintiles of consumers due to inflation. Inflation has absolutely ravaged these cohorts over the past 5 years. And the fact that the Fed has declared victory over inflation, as evidenced by its current plan to continue cutting interest rates at least once or twice this year, on top of the 100 basis points already provided, has only served to underwrite this conviction. The Fed doesn't care about inflation. Inflation is too high. Inflation has already wiped out the bottom four quintiles, and the Fed wants more of it. They don't say they want more of it, but they're acting like they want more of it by ending, pretty much ending QT on treasuries, still $35 billion of mortgage-backed securities. But they're they're really more worried about growth than they ever are concerned about inflation. If you ask the Fed, what do you care more about in a stagflation scenario where the consumer and GDP is in a funk, but we have very high inflation, what do you do? Well, I would cut interest. Powell will say, I would cut interest rates because I'm more concerned about consumers. He's more concerned about banks' assets in reality. So let's get that out of the way. So yes, we have the specter of tariffs, which increases taxes and creates friction. But we also have that inflation, that stubborn inflation. We also have a reducing labor force. We have decreased public spending. We have market liquidity drying up because of positive real interest rates and the reduction of the Fed's balance sheet, because bank lending standards are tightening once again. And of course, the reverse wealth effect from falling equity and real estate prices. The latter could absolutely torpedo banks' balance sheets in the near future, as surging inventories of unsold homes leads to tumbling home prices. That is happening now in Florida and Texas, by the way. There's price reductions on existing elevated inventory every single day. And the same things in Texas. But let us expound a bit on the last 20% of those highest, that highest quintile of earners, or actually more precisely, let's just focus on the top 10% of earners for a second. They have kept the economy growing these last few years because they are the least negatively impacted by inflation. The top 10% of income earners, this is how important they've become. They now own 90% of all equities and are responsible for 50% of all consumer spending. Top 10%. 90% have become irrelevant because the top 10% own 90% of the stocks and half of all spending is what they're responsible for. They also own nearly 50% of all real estate values. By the way, the number of new single family homes for sale is now 500,000 units. The last time it was this high was December of 2007, which was the date, coinciding with the start of the Great Recession and global financial crisis. That means the economy is the most susceptible ever to the reverse wealth effect from stock and real estate prices that are now rolling over. I mean, the S&P is down 1.2% as I record this podcast because of Trump's latest announcement on tariffs on automobiles. The buy and hold, target date funding, dollar cost averaging, automatic funding of 401k plans dynamic, that function that has been going on for decades, has not only sent stock values to record highs, but has caused a record concentration of just a handful of names. After all, what else would you expect from the chronic interest rate manipulations from the Fed that pushed real interest rates into profoundly negative territory, along with the massive expansion of the base money supply that the Fed, especially under Powell, I thought Bernanke was bad, and especially under Powell, has pursued over the past two decades. It started under Greenspan and then, you know, Yellen and Bernanke, and it went into overdrive under Powell, let's be honest. But for the since the great global financial crisis, which started with Bernanke, this inculcation of just buy stocks and just fund your 401k plan and just blindly buy target date funds, it's just gone into hyperdrive. So for an example of this equity market concentration, in the Nifty 50 days of 1973, the top concentration of the top 10 cap-weighted stocks comprised 34% of the S&P 500, the Nifty 50 days. These are the stocks that could never go down, and everybody bought them. They were 34% of the S&P. During the NASDAQ.com mania, the concentration in the top 10 cap-weighted stocks was 30%. But at the start of 2025, the top 10 stocks made up an incredible 40% of the headline index. To put it bluntly, based on metrics such as price to sales, total market cap of equities to GDP, negative risk premiums, this is not only the most overvalued stock market in history, it is also the most concentrated one as well, making this one of the most dangerous markets ever. That's my opinion. I'm not going to change it. I'm just telling you the facts. It is the most overvalued, concentrated, and that makes it the most dangerous ever. Pento Portfolio Strategies remains focused on looking at the financial conditions index and the credit spreads that I monitor every day for the timing of the next opportunity to reduce risk in the portfolio. And it could be right around April 2nd when we finally have some clarity as to the depth and magnitude of these tariffs. But no matter what, the conditions that I mentioned before lead me and the model that I created to believe that this is going to be a very difficult year, 2025. It is, and at best, you're going to get a few percentage points positive returns if everything goes smoothly, but there's landmines abound everywhere. And watching those liquidity metrics that I monitor as they continue to run dry, boy, you could have a blow up in the bond market and the credit markets and the stock market. And if you don't have an advisor that's watching that, poor you. The major averages remain overvalued by 50%. And that disparity needs to be reconciled either through a protracted period of relatively strong and stable GDP growth while stocks remain flat for about a decade, or by a plunge in the market. The latter is the most likely scenario to occur, and we remain myopically focused on both protecting and profiting from it.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com. or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.